Inside on Business, the News Hour, is made possible through the support of RE/MAX Real Estate Concepts with offices in Iowa and Nebraska. It's realestateconcepts.net. And Iowa Computer Repair. You want your computer to work? That's what they do. IowaComputerRepair.com.
Welcome back to the Business News Hour. If you missed the first half of the conversation, we were introducing you to one of the six individuals who are vying for the opportunity to represent Iowa in Iowa's 3rd Congressional District. That primary is going to be taking place in June, and there are six individuals that are attempting to do this. One did drop out. There were seven at one time. Mm-hmm. And with us is Austin Frerich. Austin is the youngest, I would suspect, of all of the individuals running. Would that be accurate?
It's true, and you can't be running a trust-busting campaign without a competitive primary.
So there you go. Exactly. And it is a competitive primary.
Oh, it's super competitive.
Yeah, there are six individuals. Men and women involved in this. It's quite the slate.
It's going to be a photo finish. I think this will be the most competitive race in the state this year.
Really? All right. Well, we shall see. It's not a big district. It's only 16 counties. Very manageable to get around. Iowa's 1st congressional district is crazy. It's half of the state, for crying out loud. But here in the 3rd, we're a little bit more fortunate as far as time.
But it's a very interesting district because you have the richest parts of Iowa and the poorest parts of Iowa.
Let's tick down some policy issues that you're interested in, okay?
Okay.
We'll start. Let's start out with something that's top of mind awareness right now, and that's guns and gun control.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this one, the fact that always sticks out to me in this conversation is that 84% of gun deaths in Iowa are suicide. It's usually older men. Usually farmers and veterans. As we saw, and you're seeing farmers have the highest suicide rate of any
of all professions. That's right.
Because you have your family legacy on your shoulders. And I think we're on the verge of another farm crisis, especially with this inflation ticking up. And you're starting to see those numbers tick up too. So once you frame the conversation this way, it's a lot easier to talk about withholding periods. It's also another reason why I support Medicare for All. It's just the mental health, treating mental health is the same as physical health.
Well, you've just lopped off
some
very important
projects. I'm getting better
projects.
At this.
You're very, very good. Yeah. But we've got time, so you can can stretch that out a little bit. So talk to me about specifics when it comes to firearms in the United States. What do you think? What should we maybe do?
I'm really interested in the gun liability insurance. We need to see more in that, but the whole notion of,
Similar. You have a vehicle, so you have to have vehicle insurance.
Yeah, for your guns. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you do everything right, you know, good gun owner, hunt, no criminal record, really low premiums, if nothing, hardly anything. But if you have some indicators like domestic abuse in your past, your insurance rates are going to be really high.
And then that would, of course, take some...
It'll price some people out of the market.
Yeah.
You're not saying no. Anyone can – you can do it. But you have to get the insurance.
I've always thought that the cool thing to do about guns was at the birth of every child in the United States, they get a Glock.
What's a Glock?
A gun.
Oh, okay, okay.
A firearm. but you just make the rounds, the bullets, $1,000 a piece.
Oh, so that way you can't afford
Yeah, okay. Black market. So, you talked about Medicare for All. Tell us about that's a big talking point out there.
Oh, it is. But, I mean, it's more – I come at it just from efficiency. You have 10 federal health care programs. Medicare, Medicaid, CHIP, community health centers, Indian Health Services, TRICARE, VA, premium tax credits, health savings account, and employer-based health care. You could have a household of 10 people having 10 different programs. That's so inefficient. And what happens is a good company will just exploit that. Look at pharmaceuticals. It's just simplicity, and we can't have our health care tied to employment in the 21st century.
Because employment is so non-static.
Yeah, because you bounce around. You're like... Let's say if you have two kids and you're 42, you're not going to leave your job at principal to go start that new company that you're really excited about and you think could be the next thing because you're living for someone else. You're responsible for those children. So it's holding back our economy.
So not having choice.
Not having choice. And like I see it with my mom, like we've had moments in our life where our health insurance has been up in the air and just seeing there's preventive care people don't get because they don't have that coverage. And then that situation compounds itself.
One of the interesting things that we had today, as a matter of fact, prices for hospital care jumped by 1.3% in the most recent CPI Consumer Price Index. Those costs, those health care costs, continue to go up.
Oh, the consolidation right now in the healthcare industry is very scary. you have CVS and Aetna health insurance buying each other, and now they're starting off an arms race with the Wells Fargo announcement, Amazon, and on top of it, there's tons of hospitals buying each other. It's an arms race.
Why is that bad?
The lack of competition. I mean, that's what happens now is you have, I think CVS, their market share might be like a third. I mean, because you want, it's not even just that third nationally. In some of these markets, they have a monopoly. There's no other things. And so they can set the price. Pharmaceuticals are really good at exploiting that.
There are three major companies, Amazon being one of those, that just announced recently that they're going to start their own healthcare insurance company.
Yeah.
Berkshire Hathaway, the Oracle of Omaha, is in on that as well. It was rumored at the time that that would give choice to at least the individuals that work for those three companies. You don't think that's a good idea?
I mean, Amazon's never underestimate Amazon. Never. It's kind of amazing what they've done. And what they can do to a stock.
Right.
I'm a Democrat arguing for competition. And that's it. If they can come up with a cool new product, great. But what you're seeing is once companies have this monopoly, they will stifle innovation. I think you see – beer is my favorite one to talk about.
Beer?
Yeah. So Anheuser-Busch and InBev sell 60% of the beer in this state. My dad actually used to sell beer for a living in Cedar Rapids. He did all the cases. So like I grew up in a household full of beer merchandise, like beer towels and everything. But – So not only are they buying up all the crap breweries, you know, Goose Island, all that. You'll notice in Fairway, there's been like buy two, get one free six pack.
Sure.
It's all Budweiser products. But on top of it, they're buying the ecosystem like ratemybeer.com owned by Budweiser. So who knows what the algorithm's pushing? So you're seeing that's what's scaring me about these healthcare mergers is as they get more powerful, they're going to start limiting any kind of thing, innovation or anything that threatens their model.
Let's talk also then about pharmaceuticals as long as we're into healthcare. United States has far higher cost of pharmaceuticals than, say, our neighbor to the north in Canada. Even though the same drugs are being manufactured in Iowa, shipped to Canada, we cannot then buy those Canadian drugs because FDA and others say, well, we don't trust foreign drugs, but yet those drugs are already made here. How do we fix that?
I mean,
there's a lot of money in pharmaceuticals.
Oh, I mean, that's the big one. That's what runs DC. I mean, here's a good example of just how brilliant they are at corrupting the system. Hepatitis C. You might see the ads are everywhere.
Xarelco, I think it is.
Xarelco, Harvati,
yeah, right.
You name it. The cures, last I knew, it was like 80,000. The way, and Medicare Part D, by the way, written by industry. The way it works is you're capped at 5% copay if you get through the donut hole. $80,000 cure, that's still $4,000 on a fixed income. So what pharma did is it created these independent charities. I was actually just talking to a Washington Post reporter about this. They donate $4,000 to these charities. And guess what? These charities will then pay your copay. So then the pharmaceutical company gets $76,000 from the government, from Medicare.
Because yeah.
On top of it, hepatitis C is predominantly in older Americans because blood wasn't screened. It's like – and so there's no – you can charge as much as you want, Michael. And on top of it, they hide this money offshore because they're the biggest abuser of our tax code. So they're milking the government, bankrupting Medicare, and hiding the money offshore.
Austin Frerich, ladies and gentlemen, giving you some sobering information this afternoon. That's why we asked you to come here, and that's why we're asking each one of the six candidates to come in and have this discussion. Let's move our topic to student debt. Iowa's one of the top 10 states in the nation for high student debt. What do you do about that, Congressman?
To quote Art Cullen of the Storm Lake Times, Iowa's two largest exports are our soil and college-educated youth. When you load kids up, the best thing about Iowa is our quality of life. I don't think we realize how good we have it. It's pretty cheap to live here compared to other states. Problem is, you get that kind of debt, do you take that job in Adel, or you take the job in Twin Cities? You take the job at Twin Cities. And then what happens? You get there, you find a special someone, you settle down.
There, right.
Yeah, you're there. That student debt is just compounding itself in Iowa. And then the privatization... I mean, the University of Iowa, I mean, the amount of students from Iowa has collapsed. So they're chasing out-of-state students or Chicago kids. And part of that chase is they have to build fancy-dancy luxuries like restaurants and dorms because that's what the rich kids want. So it's driving up the cost for the Iowans left behind.
And how does that work with regard to equal opportunity for education?
It doesn't. It hinders access. Because right now, what I really don't like about higher ed is actually the FAFSA. Have you ever filled out the FAFSA?
I have not, but no.
Oh, no. It's like this whole – it's a nightmare. It's a document you have to disclose everything you own.
This is the federal federal aid program for education, right?
Yeah,
everybody has to fill it out.
You have to fill it out to get aid.
Right.
And what that does is – you know when you go to Kohl's and you see the sticker price, but you never pay sticker price?
Correct.
You have a coupon.
Right.
What FAFSA does is no one ever really pays sticker price. You know, Iowa, $20,000. Grinnell's like $60,000. That's just a sticker price. What FAFSA does is you disclose everything you own. And then what the FAFSA allows the college to do is pay you, charge you the maximum ability of your willingness to pay.
Because you've got it.
Because they know how much you can pay. They know like they know how much to squeeze you. That's our model. The thing is, the working class kid whose parents didn't go to college doesn't know that game's going on. So they see that price tag and they're like, oh, I can't play that game. It shuts it down. We had free tuition before. The University of California system was a model. Was a middle-class engine. Iowa, too. And you've just seen this tuition and what it does to our society.
And yet at the same time, and I know it's a state issue, there are continued cuts in school funding for not only public schools, but also colleges and community colleges. All right, let's move to another favorite topic of yours. How about infrastructure and the economy in rural Iowa?
Oh, I mean, that's – so I'm from Cedar Rapids, but we live in Winterset now. And that is, I think, missing in this conversation is the last 8 years really was an urban recovery. A lot of rural communities didn't experience this growth. And you're seeing this, you're seeing them pull apart. You know, a lot of these factories moved offshore, and then you have the consolidations going on in agriculture where 10 farms become one. And then we were talking about driverless cars. What about driverless tractors?
It's already there.
It's already there. You're in a tractor, and basically the farmer's there to turn it. And they're so proud of it because that's huge that they got enough money. You know, they worked so hard to get there. But you're like, dude, the next step is you not in the tractor. That's scary for Iowa. I think we really need to rethink agriculture in this state because on top of it, cars are moving to batteries. What's going to happen to that 40% of ethanol? The market's already glutted. This inflation is going to cause a lot of farmers who are over-leveraged to go under. And then if that demand collapses because of NAFTA or ethanol, Iowa's in a very – it's scary.
What do you do about that, Austin?
So, good tea. Earl Butz. Remember Earl Butz from Secretary President Presidents Nixon Ford?
Right.
He took a pitchfork to New Deal policies that manage supply, which, by the way, they were implemented because we saw what happened with the Dust Bowl. When you only do volume, you push your land. So he took the pitchfork, and now he told farmers to plant, like, get bigger, go home, fence row to fence row. I think Iowa's water quality, the hollowing out of our community, and the unhealthiness in our society is the root of this.
So in other words, what Earl Butz said, you got to specialize in corn, soybeans, cattle, or hogs.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we realize as a state what $7 corn did, peak corn did in 2012. So much conservation land and grazing land was taken out of production in southwest Iowa. So many orchards were plowed under. Like, we've seen from cities are too dependent on one thing what happens. All I'm saying is, let's take maybe 2 acres and put carrots or 2 acres, put trees, like hemp, whatever it is, the product, diversify.
Go back to diversification of farms. Yeah, with which by the way, I lived on a diversified farm, very diversified farm. We didn't want for much of anything.
What do you guys grow?
Well, you had cattle and corn and hogs and chickens
And,
yeah, 3 acres of a garden.
But
and
farmers, you drive by a farm in Iowa now, there's no livestock.
No.
That's what shocked me. I realized that the other day. You might see some cattle, especially after they harvest corn, but there's no pigs. There's no chickens.
No, those are all in CAFOs.
And that's the weird thing is I'm not a big organic person, but like I studied abroad in Southern Africa. Chicken, wild chicken, you know, chicken like on a farm just tastes more chickeny. It just has a better flavor.
It's a chicken, right?
Yeah.
If it's allowed to be a chicken. We have been spending a majority of time here on the Business News Hour today with Austin Frerich. Austin is one of the six candidates who is running for the opportunity to represent Iowa in the 3rd Congressional District. So what's your day like? Are you spending time on phones?
No, I'm not.
You're not?
the current metric in Democrat success is your dollars raised. You telemarket all day so you can buy media at the end. That model's broken. It's pretty clear at this point. I'm also young and I'm in a competitive race of six people. Let me try something new. Let me earn media. Let me bounce around. Because half of it is, you talk about monopolies. I have to show how monopolies impact your life. And a lot of that is just talking with people and workshopping that idea to figure out where it connects with folks.
Good stuff. Thank you for coming by.
Yeah,
appreciate
thank you
it.
So much, Michael.
All right, we'll have to do this again, perhaps after June, right?
Yeah, we can keep talking. I love this stuff.
And he is getting earned media all over the state. He's a bright young man. Hope that you look him up. We will have links to his campaign website on the radio blog. All right, we've got to clear on out of here. It's 9 on to 6 o'clock. Tyler Hackenmiller is our producer. He is each and every evening making sure that you get the broadcast, and we put out the podcast. Also involved with Inside on Business, the NewsHour, Mary Sayer is the liaison between our advertising agency and the Des Moines Radio Group. Patrick Wood is the program manager for the radio station. Jimmy Olson is the voice of Inside on Business, the NewsHour. James Goodlett wrote the music that you're listening to right now. And Jeff Delvaux is the general manager for the Des Moines Radio Group. For all those folks and our guests, my name is Michael Libby. Have yourself a wonderful evening, would you please? Be safe, be well, be careful. Most of all, be good to your fellow man. And happy Valentine's Day.